Welcome to minute 65 of season 3 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off this week is the famous author of the academic article about Die Hard called John McClane's Origin Story, Understanding Die Hard as Film Adaptation of Roderick Thorpe's Nothing Lasts Forever, which can be found in the International Journal of Literary Humanities. So the author is Andrea Loaf. Welcome back to the show, Andrea.
Well, thank you for that glowing introduction. Now I feel like everyone is going to come asking me, you know, or asking you for to read that article because it's behind a paywall.
Am I allowed?
But
I've
got that PDF.
Am I allowed
to
send it to people?
PDF. Sure. No. If they want to read it, they can read it.
I thought you want royalties.
My liberties as an author is I can share it with whomever I want. If someone really wants it and wants to get in touch, then they really want to read it. The people who pay for the articles are the people that can afford to pay or are, I don't know, maybe less knowledgeable of the fact that academics always want you to read their stuff. And so they will give it to you for free.
Okay. Hey, that works. Why not? All right. So minute 65 begins with John saying Roy and ends with Dwayne Robinson trying to explain the fallacies of Powell's logic. So yesterday we ended off with having a opening salvo of conversation between John and Al, where the two of them are starting to become a little bit closer in everything that they say and do. So basically, this minute continues that because, you know, Al asked how he should refer to John. And since John doesn't want to give away his real name, you know, John Gennaro, he just tells him, call me Roy.
Yeah.
So, you know, now Al knows how to refer to him. So he goes, well, listen up, Roy. If you think of anything else you think we need to know, don't be shy, okay? In the meantime, find a safe place to hole up and let us do our job. Understand? So I actually have a problem with this dialogue because Al is very condescending to Roy at this point. You know, he suspects that Roy is a cop. Mm-hmm. And that he's a badge, as he'll say. I think on Monday he basically will say that. But you know, he's basically saying to him, all right, we're going to take care of everything. Don't worry about it. We don't need your, he's implying that we don't need your help.
Yeah.
Even though he knows that he needs that, needs his help. He's like, okay, Ellie's finances are on it. So don't worry about it.
Yeah. So I think that's that procedural look at following the rules. And John does not follow the rules, but Al is a little more, I guess, coloring within the lines he appears. That's the air that I get from Al. Especially when, you know, he shows up in the second movie as well. And thinking
right.
of those quotes. But because.
Are you peeing in someone else's pool?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yes. That quote. Because he knows that the police are supposed to be on it. You know, they're not supposed to have someone helping them in there. So it's, you know, it's just kind of saying it because that's what's supposed to be said, I guess.
Okay, but on the other hand, he knows how essential it is for them to have someone on the inside here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know,
this is not your typical situation.
No, not at
all. And Al is one of the few people here who understands the gravity of everything that's happening around them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked earlier this week, and I've talked many times about it over the course of all the episodes till now. Mm-hmm. How everyone is just you know, brushing off the fact that there are terrorists who have taken over a building and someone has notified the authorities about it. You know,
yeah.
There's something wrong with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I
don't know.
I'm just trying to think. I had a train of thought here with John and Al. What was it? Oh, like the whole fact that they're on a party line. He can't, you know, Al can't quite plan out everything, like tell John, oh, we need you to go do this because people are listening. So it's, you know, he kind of just has to let John do do his own thing without any sort of direction. And, you know, he can give the company line of, you know, don't do anything because we are on it, but anything.
No, but I think he's being sincere though. He's not just saying it for the party line. I mean, you mentioned the party line aspect of it. I mean, they should give us a shot of Theo listening in, you know, also. Like, why do we need to, I mean, is this just to once again say that, okay, Theo has stopped working because he's listening to what Powell is saying to John? I don't know.
I do think that Al does mean it, but I think also he means it, but he knows there's not much else he can say.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And while he's doing this, there a young cop next to Al is starting to tend to his bleeding forehead. You know, which Al doesn't look very happy that they're doing that.
Yeah.
You know.
That's always a thing. They never want medical attention. These rugged, masculine characters. It's just
you would
any
call
sort of
Reginald
help.
Vell Johnson's character masculine and rugged?
I don't know. Not particularly his character, but just the archetype of that era of like what it means to be a man is not to accept help even if you're bleeding from your head.
Oh, it's just a little bit of blood. Yeah.
It's just a flesh wound.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, Monty Python.
Always got to make that reference.
For sure, for sure. So, I mean, one of the things that Al says is find a safe place to hole up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I always thought that phrase was hold up. You know, I mean, I understood it to mean the same thing, but I never thought about the fact that it was to hole up.
Yeah,
right.
To kind of get in, I'm thinking now of like a foxhole, or you know, just like a
right. So
the less formal hidey hole.
Right. Correct. Exactly. So I looked it up to see what the phrase hole up means, and it's to hide out in or as if in a hole or a cave, which then makes sense to hole up as opposed to it, or it could be to place in or as if in a refuge. Or hiding place. So, no, I mean, it makes sense that's what it is.
Yeah.
So, at this point, we then see a car come behind him. You know, sorry, before that, after Al says to him, understand. So, McClane goes, they're all yours, Al. And then at this point, we see that Theo... basically stops listening and continues to drill. And then we see a shot of the whole construction area around them. And we see a car show up and, you know, a cop is walking around quite casually. And then another car shows up and like slams on the brakes and two people get out of it. And then we have this new character that shows up played by Paul Gleason. Yep. You know, fame of the Breakfast Club. That's probably his most famous role besides his role here. Okay, and I love the conversation between the two of them. You know, which we're going to get cut off at the end of today, and we'll have to continue with next week. But it starts off really well. You know, he gets out and he goes, "All right, who's talking to them? I am, sir, Sergeant Powell, Al Powell, Dwayne Robinson Powell. What's the deal here? What do these pricks want? Well, if you mean the terrorists, sir." We don't exactly know. We haven't heard a peep from them. Well, who have we been talking to? We don't know that either, sir. He won't give us his name, but he appears to be the one who phoned in the report. He's killed one terrorist for sure, and he claims he's capped off two others. He claims? Has it occurred to you? And then he gets cut off. So, I mean, we immediately get this conversation between the two of them, where if you think about it, Powell says nothing here. You know, as much as we're all meant to hate, Dwayne Robinson, he's completely right with everything he says here. You know, we'll wait until next week to see how that thing plays out and whether it stays that way. But right now, all of his questions are completely legitimate questions. You know, who have we been talking to and what do they want? And then the answer is, we're talking to someone who's inside, who's not one of the terrorists. And he claims...
Yeah, it's weird.
He claims that there are three terrorists dead. You know, and so his response saying he claims makes a lot of sense. It's like, has it occurred to you?
Yeah.
You know. So we will have to wait until Monday to find out what he thinks has occurred to him. But still, mm-hmm. you know, it gives us the great insight into the dynamics between, you know, the cop on the street and the bureaucrat, you know, as they're looking at the situation. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the idea of being able to look at the situation, you know, from a more global perspective, you know, just basically going backwards and seeing things from a higher perspective, you know, a greater height of perspective, you know, in order to take everything in, mm-hmm. you know, look at the whole of the situation, not just the specifics, because Al is looking at the specifics, but here, Robinson is trying to look at the whole situation, how it's going to affect a lot of different aspects of everything going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he,
yeah, it's so hard for us as the audience. We like, we've seen everything, we've experienced everything that's going on. We're like, but when it is distilled down to those facts, yeah, it does sound like that to someone coming in. Like, yeah, we don't know who they are. Like, we've just been talking to some random dude.
And so for Robinson to be suspicious makes sense for everything that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we go back to the whole aspect that we discussed earlier this week. Everyone seems to be taking the terrorist threat a little too unseriously.
Yeah.
You know, automatically, there are no terrorists here. You know, next week we're going to hear him talk about the fact that maybe it was just a stockbroker who took a dive. You know, it's like, hello. Someone called in a complaint about terrorists. Take it seriously. Assume that there really are terrorists there.
Yeah. Just how incredulous he is. He takes a tone with Al, and he just got there. And it's like, why do you have to be so negative or have that sort of, you know, why can't you talk to him as, I mean, there's a ranking system here. So he's a sergeant and Al is
chief of police.
Yeah. Al's a sergeant, deputy chief of police. Yeah. So it's not exactly like he's talking with a colleague of like, you know, oh, what do we know? But
no, they also don't know each other.
He's just talking down to him. Yeah. I mean, and that's what bothers me about that point. And I mean, of course it's meant to be, we're painting Paul Gleason's character as another inept cop.
Yes. And that's the whole point of this. Although, I mean, we're not supposed to like him. He's not a character we're supposed to like. If I remember correctly, in the novel, you also don't like Dwayne Robinson. You know, he's the same type of, you know, bureaucrat. As they're in a, I think he's supposed to be younger? I'm trying to remember. It's been a while since I've been. I'm only reading the novel as things move along. I read it like 20 years ago or 30 years ago. So I don't really remember. I mean, I remember what happens to Robinson, and I'm not going to mention that. I'm not going to spoil that.
Well, I just got to a page that has his name. He's only a captain in the novel. So maybe there's that part too that technically Al
No, a sergeant. I think a sergeant. Still a sergeant doesn't that rank.
Oh no.
No.
Well, I am not familiar. No. With that, so a thank
sergeant.
You for
sergeant doesn't outrank a captain, and from what I remember, also from the book, Powell is supposed to be pretty much a rookie. You know.
Yeah, there's that too.
You know, he's not. You know, Reginald Vell Johnson plays the character probably as someone who's in his late 30s, early 40s, but if I remember correctly, in the novel, he's supposed to be a relatively young sergeant. If I remember correctly, you would probably know better than I would, because you
I'm looking
because you've written an article about it.
But I feel like he's pretty young. It's been a bit since I've read the novel. I wanted to read it again before this, but I did not get around to it. So I've got my copy open here with some of my original notes from when I wrote the article. But no, I just flipped to the end because I remember what happens to Robinson in the novel. And I knew he would be in the end. So I was looking for his name. And he was a captain in the novel. Right. But yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, I mean, do you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute?
Not really. I do not.
All right. So first of all, we'll go into the script here. There are a few little things here. First of all, I love the description in the script of Dwayne. It says, Exterior police operations night. An unmarked police car pulls up across the street from Nakatomi Building, and a man in a sports coat climbs out. Stocky, his hair a little too perfect, the very fact that he is the deputy chief of police of operations on a Christmas Eve, gives some evidence to his position in the pecking order. His name is Dwayne T. Robinson, and he moves brusquely past police technicians and goes to the forward group of officers. And then they have their whole conversation. And so when Robinson gets there, he goes, Dwayne Robinson, well, what have you learned? What do they want? And, you know, then we have the typical responses that Powell gives in the movie. Those aren't really there. Mm-hmm. It's just a little slight discrepancy between them. Next week, we'll have more things to say about him. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
I just think that's funny. He's got a sports coat, but at the same time, if you're thinking, well, he might have been out somewhere celebrating Christmas Eve, probably. That all of these people,
well, not all of them,
might have been called from.
Not
somewhere.
All of them. Most of the uniformed police are probably people who are either on duty or were on their way home. Like, you know, I don't think it's anything beyond that. You know.
No, but just when I think of that description, it almost reminded me of Harvey.
Yes.
We talked about the other day, just like. Like to the pretty boy sort of look that
sports coat and shorts
that I get from that. Yes, and that's a similar character that we don't really like Harvey. We don't really like Dwayne.
Correct, but for different reasons. Harvey's just an idiot. Sure. Dwayne is just a bureaucrat who thinks he knows everything. That's the difference between the two of them.
Yes.
You know, so right. All right, so. Since this is the last minute that you're taking part in, you know, I'm sure that you have so much to say about the movie and other things that happened. So what are some points you would like to bring up about the movie, whether stuff that's happened before, stuff that's going to happen in the future? You know, what are some of the things you want to leave a lasting impression on the our listeners with?
Well, I keep going back to the differences between the novel and the film. And I mean, our minutes do not have Holly in them, but Holly in the novel is
his daughter,
Joe's daughter. And so it changes the way we see that relationship, that now it's his wife versus saving his daughter. And in the novel, Steffi is actually a little corrupt. So she's had, she makes like $40,000 a year, but like spends all of it. She's like out of control in her spending, takes 3 vacations a year. There's these quotes. And I think that she and the company, which is Claxon Oil. That they made a deal with Chile or some people down in Chile that is like an arms deal almost. So it's like some shady stuff that this company is doing. And in the novel, there's actually a political justification for the terrorists to be there. They're trying to teach.
Well, that's what Hans wants to also. Hans wants to teach him a lesson.
Well, yeah, there's we can't see that direct political motivation because he kind of has those. Hans has that grand speech in the beginning, but there's no real, motivation that we can see that's very clear versus Claxon had this corrupt organization. We don't know the same thing about Nakatomi, but my original point on honing in on Steffi versus Holly is that trying to save your daughter, a little different than trying to save your wife and who you're trying to repair a marriage with. So there's different ways to look at the novel.
Well, they made up for that in the fourth Die Hard movie, you know, by having, you know, his daughter there.
That's true. And I hadn't thought about it that way, but his daughter is also pretty badass.
Okay.
Like she's great. But yeah, so it's just a different way. Cause his marriage is very much on the rocks in this movie. And his wife was in the novel. They divorced and she was dead. Sure. He thinks about her from time to time. I think her name's Karen in the novel, but yeah. So there's those differences.
I always liked the connection with the stewardess in the novel. I thought that added a whole new dynamic to it. And
there's so much more
They actually have a cut scene from the movie within the first few minutes where he walks past the stewardess, who we only get a glimpse of the two of them eyeing each other in the movie itself. Mm-hmm. But there's a cut scene where they have an extended conversation, not as extended as they do in the novel, where basically she comes on to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But I mean, obviously they cut it out for obvious reasons, but in the novel, the whole fact that she, you know, he's trying to get in contact with her and she's the person on the outside trying to help and stuff like that. So I always like that aspect of it.
There's a random other character named Taco Bill in the novel too, that also has a CB radio, but I think I think of him as, one of those people who's really into CB radio and just happens to be on that same frequency that night. So he just gets to interject himself into. There's a lot of little nuances in the novel that make it kind of fun seeing how it's translated into film. But I think overall, just the genres of them all, I haven't gone back and read The Detective. I think that would be very interesting to get more.
Have you seen the movie?
Information on Joe Leland. I mean, there's the Frank Sinatra movie.
I've seen it twice. The movie. It's not something that I would expect, Frank Sinatra to have been in. It was very gritty for 1968.
Yes.
And my first choice of an actor would not have been Frank Sinatra for that. And so I give him a lot of credit for taking that role, especially given the fact that he had written in his contract, that if they ever make another movie with the character, he gets first rights. You know, that would have been interesting seeing him here.
I think about that. Yes. But just to have that sort of background going into Nothing Lasts Forever, you know more about the character because you've read the previous book. Whereas in the film, like, we're just introduced to him. So it's kind of like a blank slate. Even though it's supposed to be an adaptation, we don't quite have the same sort of relationship with John McClane. We come to it thinking, you know, Die Hard, action movie. But I mean, I just go back to genre and being how fascinated I am that go from detective to thriller or suspense, and then it gets into action eventually.
Exactly. Do you remember if Roderick Thorpe wrote any other novels with the character Joe Leland?
Ooh, you know, I do not know that off the top of my head. I don't think so. Yeah, because Joe Leland's series. So
you're gonna see Joe Leland's series. There are two
different.
No, I don't know. I was just joking.
So that's not necessarily a great.
I was joking.
Oh, no?
I don't know how many. Okay. How many series there are.
I do not see anything after Nothing Lasts Forever. That would be really interesting to see. I think
based on what happens in the end of this novel, which we're not going to get into yet, I'll talk about that later on. I think it would be really hard for them to have created another sequel to it. Again, just for anyone who's concerned, Joe Leland makes it alive. John McClane makes it alive. But he's definitely has a lot of psychological baggage. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And that's that other difference is you don't really see that wear on John in this first film. Like, he's happy to be reunited with Holly, but like all the stuff about all these people that he's killed. And that's another reason, calling back to my top five Die Hard films, Becky is the same thing with her. Like, all of that, all the people that she kills. I mean, you know, going into it that if it's going to be like Die Hard, that she's going to kill people, but you don't see a wear on her as much, just kind of like a deadness to her eyes. There's not a deadness to Bruce Willis, does not have dead eyes, so it's not a similar sort of thing, but all of that has happened, and then he just rides off with Holly and Argyle, and all the weather outside is frightful.
Well, that's something I always love about movies. I love that,
let it snow,
things can end. And you always wonder, okay, what happens to the characters after this happens? So, you know, it's like things like that. The movies end. You know, I've always dreamed of being able to to, you know, write 5-page synopsises of what happens after the end of a movie. You know, like what happens to the characters? You know, even something like Forrest Gump. Okay, what happens mm-hmm. after 5 years later? You know, that type of thing. How does life continue and things like that? You know, it's always fun to think about that. And you're right, with Die Hard, it's the same thing. You know, he and Holly get into the broken limousine and drive off with Argo. You know, that type of thing. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we get to find out 2 years later, because then That's we right. get That's Die right. Hard
which,
2.
Which
Die
we
Hard.
Will be discussing either next season or the season after. That is the plan. We'll have to see. So to answer your question, so Al Powell cool. is a 22-year-old Los Angeles police sergeant in the novel. Dwayne Robinson is the deputy yes. chief of police.
Yes.
Okay. And it's not Hans Gruber. It's Anton Little Tony the Red Gruber. That's his, you know, you mentioned yes. Stephanie Gennaro. Carl is Anton's right-hand man. And, Leland kills Carl's younger brother, Hans. Very interesting. They switched Hans and Tony in that, right? And there is no Mr. Takagi. It's Mr. Rivers. And we still get Harry Ellis.
Yeah.
Still there. Exactly. Well, mm-hmm. that's the point of him, I guess.
Still annoying.
All right. Well, Andrea, this was so much fun. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me and to talk to everyone else on your views of Die Hard. I hope you also had a fun time with this, you know, even though it wasn't too academic, you know.
Yes. No, thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of this.
I'm very happy to. As I said at the beginning of the week, I like getting diverse perspectives on things, and, you know, getting an academic perspective on it works really well. So anyone wanting to get in touch with me, the easy way to do it is just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, or you can go directly to my website, movierobminute.com. If you want to get in touch with Andrea, again, all you have to do is just send something to me, and I will pass it on to her, and we will be able to, you know, if you want a copy of her article, just you can get in touch with me. And I think this is a great point for me to also mention that, you know, there is the community of Movies by Minutes, which was started over a decade ago by the Star Wars Minute with Alex Robinson and with Pete the retailer. And as of today, there are 212, I think, or maybe 215 different Movies by Minute that you can find. You can go to the Movies by Minute website, which is moviesbyminute.com, and you can find any of your favorite movies there. And as Jim O'Kane, the godfather of the Movies by Minute community, always says, you can listen to some of your favorite movies there. And if you see that your favorite movie isn't there, you can go and create your own podcast about Movies by Minute of your favorite movie. So the website is Movies by Minute. And once again, I want to thank everybody from that community for getting me involved in this and, you know, having me enjoy doing this so much. So once again, Andrea, thank you very much. This has been a really fun week, and I hope you will continue listening at least. And you know, you can always send in your comments.
Yes.
you can tell me when I get things wrong. How's that? Or when I get things right. That could be awesome.
I'll be interested in seeing what other Die Hard movies people All put right. on their top five.
Excellent. Well, you can just come back for the last one, and I will tell you what were the top five answers. But you won't hear all Ooh, of the yes. answers, just the top five ones. So, but you still keep listening every week. You know, you just show up every Monday.
Definitely.
If you just want to hear that. But I prefer that you come every day. All right. Excellent. Okay. So until Monday, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.